Welcome to WISO Weekend, the home of WISO-produced news and features. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us. On today's program, you'll meet some local students headed to St. Louis in the week ahead to compete in the World First Robotics Championship. And you'll get the 411 on a major cultural exchange symposium coming to Antioch College. We've got Dayton Youth Radio and Culture Couch also in the mix. Up first, women's voices from Dayton Correctional Institution.
This is Women's Voices from Dayton Correctional Institution. I'm Community Voices producer Renee Wild. Today, we meet Nakia Sullivan. When she was 13, Nakia decided she wanted to become a drug kingpin because of stuff she saw on TV. So, as a teenager, Nakia traveled between Kentucky, Ohio, and Indiana and sold drugs at big events like the Kentucky Derby. Here, Nakia talks to fellow prisoner Lachey Landry about what the lifestyle was like.
So tell me this, how would an average day would have looked like for you?
My day started at 8 p.m. That's when my day started. Call my homeboys, whatever the case may be, like, y'all got any licks for me? You got some money for me? What's it looking like out there? You know, just chop it up with them, trying to get a feel of everything, you know. Homeboys be like, nah, the police out here riding around, you might want to lay low, whatever the case may be. You know, hit swerves off your phone, like, don't come out here. Okay, like, I was never a block hugger anyway. Pop pills, ecstasy was my drug of choice. I got pregnant with my son when I was 16, and it didn't slow me down any. Like, I slowed down during my pregnancy, but once he was born, I was right back out there.
And what exactly is a block hugger?
A block hugger is somebody that sits out on the block and hustle all day. Like, to me, them is tennis shoe hustlers. Like, they sit out on the block. It's freaking 13 degrees outside, and you out on the block waiting for a fiend to walk up. They in a warm house. What you sitting out on the block for?
So what you saying is you was an expensive, house hugger? Like, what exactly are you saying?
A house hugger. That's cute. The only way I would leave my house to go on the block was if a fiend called me and didn't have a ride or whatever the case may be, and they had enough money that was going to cover my gas there and back and still be able to make a profit.
So what about a mate? Did you have a significant other? And if so, how did they feel? I mean, I wouldn't want my mate out here hitting licks and, you know, waiting on fiends to call and all that. Like, I would be terrified at night. Is the police gonna kick in the door? Like, exactly how was that working in your love life?
Interesting question. I learned to lie very well when it came to that area. My mother didn't even know what I was doing until I got incarcerated. She didn't know half of the details. My daughter's father actually endorsed it. He felt like since he lived in another city, I could help him expand. We could expand together because he knew I was going to do it anyway.
So how did you keep this from your mom? Like, how did she think you were making money? Like,
I think my mother just thought that I was a rebellious teen. Like, the stuff that I would do, like leave home from 13 to 15, she just pictured me as a runaway. You know what I'm saying? Just wanting to be out on the streets and stuff like that. And then when I got pregnant with my son at 16, his father is in the music industry, and he makes a significant amount of money. So I was able to cover up my money with his. You see what I'm saying? So she never really questioned it.
How is your life so different from then to now? Like, what do you dream about and imagine now, being almost, you know, 30?
You know, to be completely honest with you, it's still in me. So I'm just hoping that my career goal of being a motivational speaker and a medical transcriptionist and all of that outweighs and takes away that desire. Like, I hope it consumes me to the point to where I no longer fiend for that type of lifestyle. But at this point, even being incarcerated, like, that's what I know, and that's what I was doing. So I haven't done anything else besides that. So it's still there because I don't have the experience of anything else.
That was Nakia Sullivan, interviewed by Lachey Landry for our series, Women's Voices from Dayton Correctional Institution. For WYSO, I am Renee Wild.
You can listen to more Women's Voices stories on our website at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us. Today on Dayton Youth Radio, we'll hear from a teenager from Yellow Springs High School. Her name is Olivia, and she's exploring what being adopted means to teenagers. She speaks with her parents and younger brother to learn more in a feature entitled It's Just Family.
My name is Olivia Brintlinger-Khan. I am 17 and a junior at Yellow Springs High School. I was adopted from China before my first birthday, and my parents are both Caucasian. I live with my mom, dad, and younger brother, Zach. My story is about adoption because I don't understand why some people hide the fact that their child is adopted, or why they think it makes a family any less real.
I asked people from my school, what do you think defines a family?
Golden Bittner, I'm 14. And I think being able to express your feelings to your family members is really important to your family.
My name's Kylie Smith. I'm 17. I think a family is a community of people who love and support each other.
Aman, age 18. Spending a lot of time together and enjoying each other.
I also want to see how other people whose lives are affected by adoption feel.
You and I have always been very close. And honestly, I think we've been a lot closer than a lot of other siblings we know.
I spoke with my brother, Zach Brintlinger-Khan.
Zach and I shared a room until I was in sixth grade.
What do you think about adoption?
It brought me my sister, who's pretty great most of the time. I didn't even really think about the fact that you were adopted until maybe I was maybe 10 or 11. My first memories, you're always there, telling me what to do and trying and failing to bail me out of trouble. We've always been close. It's just how it is.
Do you think being biologically related to someone matters in families?
No. I don't think that at all. I mean, our family has a history of adoption. We've got a Korean aunt. We've got you. My bond with my aunt or with you is any stronger or weaker because you're not directly related to me. I love you guys, I mean, unconditionally. I never really got into any fights, but I used to shove the other kids on the playground when they would say things like, I mean, but she's not your real sister and all that jazz. I mean, I couldn't stand it. I was very upset about that.
Why'd that make you upset?
Because it's them devaluing the relationship that I have with my sister, which is strong. And honestly, it was stronger than their relationship with their siblings. I got along better. I still get along better. We're closer. I know a couple of kids who said that whose relationships with their sister, I mean, they might not have said a word to them in the past 2 weeks.
I'm technically related if you go back to the Neanderthals and stuff.
That was a really stupid note.
Except I'm more related to Genghis Khan than you are, so beat that! Okay, thanks, Zach. Love you.
Love you too, Liv.
I sometimes forget I'm not white. I was one of two visibly not white persons at my grandmother's memorial service. I think about how it might have been hard for my grandma, who came from a German immigrant family in Illinois, to have an adopted granddaughter. But I never felt anything but love.
Now I'm interviewing my parents, Angela Brintlinger and Stephen Khan.
Hi, I'm Angela.
And I'm Steve.
My first question is, do you feel like we are a real, normal family?
Of course I feel like we're a real, normal family. I'm not exactly sure what normal means.
I also don't really know what normal means, but this is the only kind of family we've ever had.
What do you think defines a family?
Family is the place where, when nobody else is going to take you, you can come home to.
Our family is the people that we think about first thing when we wake up in the morning and the last thing before we go to bed. It's the people I want to be with and that I worry about and that I cheer for.
Do you think the family would be different if I was a biological child?
A couple of years ago, we had the chance to go to China together, you and me and your brother Zach. And we went to the art museum in Shanghai, which was really quite wonderful. But outside the art museum, you and Zach started to really horse around. And at one point, you jumped on his back so that he would carry you down the sidewalk. And let me assure you that at that moment, you did not look Chinese. You looked American, because no Chinese kids were doing that on the street, and they were all staring at the two of you because you were doing stuff that Chinese kids don't do in public, not at the art museum.
I think we kind of look and act alike. I mean, there are things that you do that are very much like things that I do. I raised you. You're a lot like me in bad ways and in good ways. And so you are who you are, but I think also you are who you are because of us. And we are the kind of parents we are, in part because of you.
Sometimes I wonder if my life would be completely different if my parents were of a different race or the same race as me. I feel very lucky that I have the family that I have and that we are so close. We love each other very much. I wouldn't trade them for the world, but sometimes you can't help but wonder. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Olivia Brintlinger-Kahn at Yellow Springs High School.
That was a story entitled It Is Just Family, written and produced by Olivia Brintlinger-Kahn. To hear more stories from Dayton Youth Radio, visit WYSO.org. Special thanks to Eli Hurwitz at Yellow Springs High School. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Project Coordinator Basim Blunt.
Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Dayton Rotary Foundation, the George and Alice Wallace Charitable Foundation, and the Eddings Foundation. Find out more at WYSO.org. Three local teams of high school students are headed to the World First Robotics Championship in St. Louis this week. FIRST is the acronym for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology. The teams are made up of students from Oakwood, Fairmont, the Dayton Early College Academy, Springboro, West Carrollton, and Vandalia. On this day, they've gathered at the K-12 Gallery in Tejas on Jefferson Street in downtown Dayton for a robotics demonstration. The two robots that will compete in St. Louis have already been packed and shipped, but one robot is on hand, driven by two young female teammates. This robot whips around a makeshift obstacle course set up in the gallery.
We have insurance.
The robot has a throwing arm and shoots balls to a nearby student ready to catch them. Dennis Gehan is a volunteer with the K-12 Gallery, a sponsor of the Bonds team. It's their first year competing.
These students have been working tirelessly for months to prepare for this competition, but they only found out what kind of competition they were going to have to build a robot for in January. And then they had 6 weeks to build that robot. They designed, they planned, they built, they tested the robot, they trained, programmed the robot, they designed their own obstacles out of wood to practice overcoming the obstacles. They form their own strategy, their own tactics, they drive the robot, they manipulate the robot, they go out on the field of competition alone, no mentor standing with them or behind them. These kids do it on their own.
Joining the Bonds team in St. Louis are the West Carrollton Pirate Robotics team. Gehan says both rookie teams have performed well as new competitors.
In their first year, with only two matches for the Bonds and one match for West Carrollton, they were both named 2016 rookie all-star teams and earned a direct invitation to the World Championship, where they are going to be competing against more than 400 teams from more than 50 countries and around the United States.
Mentors play a big role in the success of a robotics team, especially rookie teams competing for the first time. Carl Springley is the lead mentor for the Bonds team. He says STEM-based programs like robotics are valuable beyond teaching just science and math.
They're also learning how to work alongside each other as a part of a team. And you also notice a lot of students build up more confidence. So it builds them up to the point where they're like, hey, I can do something great. I can do something that makes a difference. And that's something completely different than anything they can get from school. So,
student Alex Burchett programs and drives the robot for the West Carrollton Pirate Robotics.
I've always been interested in engineering. I've always played around with electronics and, you know, RC airplanes and stuff in that nature. I hope to someday become an aerospace engineer.
Tell me how fun it is to drive these machines.
The drive is fun. We actually took it out into our hallways of our high school and we're driving around, and it's a lot of fun.
Get a good reaction from people?
Yeah, they just look at us, and it is cool.
And 17-year-old John Woodman is the Pirates' team coach. He says it's all about communication.
My main job was to kind of go out and strategize with the other teams in our alliance. So I'd go talk to their coaches, and we'd figure out what their robot can and can't do, and try to develop a sound strategy for what we were going to do in autonomous and what we would do during teleop, during the matches. And then while we were actually in a match, I would direct our drivers as well as relay information between our alliance members, just kind of so we all know what's going on.
And how tough is it to coordinate all of this?
You're just kind of like in the moment, so you just do it. You don't really think. You just see things and talk.
Kind of sum up for me how a program like this can help you moving into the future, getting into college, or even looking for a job.
Well, there are a lot of scholarships at First Hands out, so that can help with paying for college. And I'd never done anything like this before, so this was kind of a good way to get basic skills. So I'm not just going into a degree knowing nothing. I mean, I'd messed around with computers before, but not only did I learn things about just like the robot in general, but like I got mechanical skills, electrical skills, programming skills, all things that will be useful in college.
Woodman's parents have stopped by to watch the day's demonstration. They both agree that the robotics program has given their son more opportunities for the future.
Well, we're very proud of him. I mean, we're very excited. Again, this is their first year, so we didn't know what to expect. And we go up to the Buckeye regional competition, and, you know, it's big-time teams, big-time dollars. There was a lot of money up there and a lot of teams and excitement, but it was a blast. And we enjoyed watching it. We enjoyed watching the kids not just succeed, but just have fun and work together. And it was very exciting. He's gotten a lot out of it, and we couldn't be prouder of those kids.
Tracy Martz is the director of STEM initiatives at the Dayton Early College Academy. She says DECA has been involved in the FIRST program for 8 years, but it's expensive. That's why neighboring schools have banded together to form teams.
My favorite aspect of our team is how we have brought students together from a suburban school and from an urban school, and they have just meshed beautifully. Most students, if they've always been brought up in a suburban area or an urban area, they may not have that type of interaction and working together as a team. Maybe not even until you get to college or out into the workforce. So our students are getting that exposure at an early age, and the cultural competency that these students are being exposed to working as a team has been fabulous. That has been my favorite aspect, is seeing how our students have just risen to the occasion to work as one team, to have that like long-term end goal.
Are they nervous, excited about this?
I think they're a little bit of both, a little bit nervous, a little bit excited. They think they know what to expect, but in general, they're really excited. And the Dayton community has been very supportive of helping the students raise the additional funds to get them where they need to be right now.
The World First Robotics Championship takes place in St. Louis, Missouri, April 27th through the 30th. If you're interested in watching the students and the robots in action, they'll be streamed live at firstinspires.org, April 29th and 30th. Again, that website is first, F-I-R-S-T, inspires.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is Why So Weekend. Coming up next, Culture Couch, our series focusing on the arts. Today, Community Voices producer Renee Wild has been fascinated by a log cabin being built near her house. She did some research and discovered an old tradition of using creative materials to fill the gaps between the logs.
I'm in the parking lot of Indian Mound Reserve outside of Cedarville. I've been driving by this park watching the progress of an old log cabin being restored, and today I'm on my way down to visit the site. I run into Joe and Mike, who have come up from Cincinnati for the day to hike in the park.
We are here to take some pictures of the waterfalls we've heard about.
Did you know that they were restoring a log cabin here?
No, but we also noticed that on the drive-in, and Mike said that looks like a really interesting building. It's too bad it's under construction right now.
Really? Because that's the cool part. For instance, people use the term chinking to describe the whole process of filling the gap between the logs. But log cabin enthusiasts know that's a two-step process. First step, find anything on hand that will close the gap between those logs. Now, this is where things got really creative for the original log cabin builders. Because remember, Lowe's wasn't around the corner. So it was basically anything they had within carrying distance that they could stuff between those gaps in the logs. So grass, straw, manure, corn cobs, mud, goat hair, underwear. In the blog article, The Messy History of Chinking, there was actually a photo of someone who had used a pair of Fruit of the Looms to block a gap in the wood. So, your underwear, that grass or manure, basically any crazy and creative thing that you could grab to block those gaps. That's called chink. And the act of actually shoving your underwear between those gaps in the logs? Well, that's the ancient building tradition known as chinking.
Put your back into it, Dave.
Now for step two of the process. This is known as daubing. This is the gray mixture similar to cement, which goes over the chink and it creates the weather sealing. Now, daubing mixtures, like chinking, really have no rules, and there's a wide range of creativity that's been shown in some mixtures. Now, here are just two samples I came across. Mix two parts Portland cement with one part oakum to one part random grass found on the ground. Or how about this one? One part muddy clay to one part goat hair to one part spit. Now, judging by the crew restoring the log cabin near my house, I'd say that the art of chinking is being lost on this present generation. I didn't see any signs of corn cobs, goat hair, manure, or even a single pair of underwear. For Culture Couch, WYSO Series on the Arts, I'm Community Voices producer Renee Wild.
This story is part of Culture Couch, WYSO Series on the Arts and Culture in the Miami Valley. For more Culture Couch stories, visit our website at WYSO.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend. Ohio, Ohio is a 10-day Japanese symposium and cultural event taking place in Yellow Springs from April 30th through May 9th. A variety of workshops, presentations, and exhibits on traditional and contemporary Japanese art, culture, and language will be offered. To get the details on these events, we spoke with Beth Bridgman, instructor of cooperative education at Antioch College and symposium organizer.
This is really a way to, it's a community engagement, collaborative effort between Antioch College and Yellow Springs Arts Council. And so it's just this wonderful way to celebrate the long history that Antioch College and Yellow Springs have with Japan.
This is the Ohio, Ohio Symposium, and the first Ohio that we're talking about is spelled O-H-A-Y-O. Let's talk about what that is.
Yeah, that's always a fun thing if you know a little Japanese. Ohayo gozaimasu is sort of hello. And so Ohio means kind of hello. And so hello, Ohio. And it's just kind of a fun play on words.
Okay. So there's a mix of events. There are some free events and then also some paid workshops in the mix as well. Let's talk about those.
Yeah. There's free events and paid workshops both for adults and for families and kids. There are four different gallery exhibits, which are fun. Two photography exhibits, a papermaking exhibit, and an exhibit on the history of the tea house at Antioch College, which is just fascinating. The three tea houses ago, we're in our third iteration now of tea houses on the campus. And there's a kimono exhibit. So those are all happening on campus and in town at various locales. We have a variety of different lectures on papermaking, the history of the Japan-Yellow Springs connection, Japanese environmentalism, a tea house lecture, and a kusaki zome lecture, and that is the natural dyeing of fabric, particularly silk. We have two artists coming from Kyoto to deliver this lecture and to do workshops for us. They're actually sisters, and Riko, one of the sisters, was a student here with our Kyoto Seika exchange program that Antioch College had before the college closed.
Oh, that's great. Before we talk about some other events in here, can you tell us a little bit about the joint history between Japan and Yellow Springs?
Yeah, the Yellow Springs-Japan connection goes back about 70 years, you know, right after the war. Several families and organizations in town helped Japanese family who had been in internment camps start their lives over here in Yellow Springs, and those families are still here today and the offspring of those folks who came 70 years ago. In terms of the college, our professor, Earl Reynolds, he was there in the 40s and 50s, I guess. He was commissioned by the Atomic Bomb Casualty Commission to go to Hiroshima and study the effects of long-term radiation on children. So he and his wife, Barbara Reynolds, started after that the World Friendship Center in Hiroshima. And then his wife, Barbara, started the Peace Resource Center at Wilmington College. And we celebrated the 40th anniversary of that last summer and the 50th anniversary of the Friendship Center in Hiroshima. So there's this just really nice connection between Antioch, Yellow Springs, and Japan.
Great. Let's talk about some of the other standout events.
So Tim Barrett is coming, and he is a renowned papermaker, and he's also an alumnus of Antioch College, and we're thrilled to have him. Sarah Strong, our local papermaker, is working with him. We have pottery workshops, another local artist Migiwa Orimo is doing two workshops, one on calligraphy and one on the idea of the Japanese negative concept of negative space in art. So just really interesting things. Sushi workshops, it's all over the map.
I'm wondering about the process for setting this up. No small task.
We started about a year ago. I was in Japan about a year ago in Kyoto, reestablishing some connections with our former co-op partners and setting up new co-op programs for us at the college. And I was meeting with some of our old Kyoto Seika students from back in the day, and they had this idea, actually. And I came back and brought it to the Arts Council, and it kind of hatched from there, and it got bigger and bigger. And so here we are with 30 events over 10 days.
And so if people want to become involved in any of the events, what's the best way to find out information?
They can go to the website that the Yellow Springs Arts Council has put together, and that's yellowspringsexperience.org.
You've entered into a number of partnerships or sponsorships to pull all this off as well.
Yes, we have generous sponsorship from the Yellow Springs Community Foundation, from the Antioch College Lloyd Family Fellowship, and from alumnus Tim Barrett.
Beth Bridgman is the instructor of cooperative education at Antioch College. Beth, thanks for filling us in on all this, and good luck with the event.
Thank you so much.
For 21 years, Rebuilding Together Dayton has been providing housing rehabilitation and home repairs to low-income residents at no cost. The national network has more than 160 affiliates. Next week, on Saturday, April 30th, the organization will take part in National Rebuilding Day. And for the second year in a row, they'll focus on Dayton's Westwood neighborhood. The median income there, according to citydata.org, is just over $21,000. The crime rate is estimated at more than twice the national average. Like most communities, time and other factors have taken a toll on the houses there. Many of them were built in the 1950s, so the need for housing rehabilitation in Westwood is substantial. 78-year-old homeowner Harold Jones knows firsthand about all of this. He's lived in the neighborhood for close to 50 years. We talked to him about what Rebuilding Together Dayton accomplished for him in 2015.
The house that I live in is not a large house, not a small house, medium size, but after time, it began to corrode, and I didn't have the finances to fix it. And I was about to move into an apartment of some sort because I couldn't afford it. But company came out and gave me an application. I filled it out. I had so much stuff on there, I just knew they weren't coming back. And they came back. Actually, they came back 2 years in a row to get it all done. And the insulation in the ceiling, it was, it's almost like dust. They replaced that. My kitchen ceiling in the kitchen was split, falling apart. I mean, it was collapsing. You could reach up and touch it. They tore it out, rebuilt it, and put it up. Fixed my big picture window, side windows, basement windows, electric outlets, maybe two in the house work. Replaced them all. The ceiling fixtures, put lights in the back and front porch. Replaced all of those where they work. And it got me a washer and dryer because I used to have to wash my hand. And anybody do that, you know you don't get your clothes as clean as they should be. But I had to do what I had to do. And they just gave me a bigger purpose to live. You know, I mean, I wasn't about to commit suicide, but it gave me a relaxing way. Tension was gone. I was glad to get up in the mornings because I didn't have to look at the horrible thing, you know, I was living at. But they did it for me.
They're focusing on your neighborhood heavily and helping others, too. How do you feel about that?
I think it's great, and you can see the improvement for the ones that they do help. Because I have a cousin living in that area, and he's a couple, 3, 4 years older than me, and he couldn't get around. They went out last year, painted his whole home on the outside, fixed the insides. But some of the neighbors where I live, the block is not tore up. It's getting old. And they actually plant flowers at my house. After that, do you know my neighbors start putting out plants, flowers, and hanging baskets? And just by that, looking at, you know, my property, it encouraged them to do more. Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to say to the people who have helped you out?
Thank you so much, and I will never forget you. And if any kind of way I can assist you in anything, I'm old, but I'm not dead. But I'll be glad to contribute my time.
Harold Jones, thanks for speaking with us.
You're welcome.
To find out more about National Rebuilding Day and how you can help, visit rtdayton.org.
That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, public radio for the Miami Valley. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Coming up next on WISO, The Book Nook.